I'm now joined by Cathy McMahon, founder of Irish First Mothers Group. Good afternoon, Cathy. Thank you very much for joining us here on Northside today. You're keeping well?
I'm very well, thanks. My voice is a bit gone.
Don't worry.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're most welcome. It's a pleasure to have you. First of all, if I may ask you, just to briefly tell us about your experience in the mother and baby homes in Dunboyne and also St. Pat's on the Navan Road.
Well, I was incarcerated in Dunboyne in 1974 from January to April, and in St. Patrick's on the Navan Road from August till December 1975.
Okay.
Yeah, it was 1974 that I was in Dunboyne. My experience there has left its mark, it's marking from both homes. And it's only really now that I'm really becoming aware of the psychological damage and its impact on me. Looking back and I see the real damage that was done to me when I was 18. I'm very emotional.
Yes, of course.
I had my first baby in April 1974 in Hollis Street Hospital, and she was taken for adoption when she was 7 days old. She was removed from my care by a nurse in Hollis Street Hospital, and I didn't see her again for 28 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And my second baby, I fought and I kept her, and I raised her myself. That was a struggle. I raised her for the first 3 years alone. But I was quite successful as a mother. And, you know, my daughter turned out very well. Both of my daughters turned out very well. My daughter that was taken from me went to a good family, and she had a good upbringing. But in saying that, you know, we have to acknowledge that although our children were illegally taken from us, it was coerced and forced adoption. We have to acknowledge that those in the majority who raised the children that were sent for adoption or taken for adoption were good families, and they did it the best that they could for those children. But there are some children who didn't have such good lives after they were taken from their mothers.
Yeah. And I think the first time around from Dunboyne to Hullah Street, whilst you knew that your baby was going to be given up for adoption, you didn't realise it was going to be swiped away so quickly after birth.
That's true.
That must have been a horrifying experience.
There was never any mention about, what was happening. You know, at 18 and literally scared out of your wits, that's very mild, a mild way of describing it.
I'd say
but,
so.
But, I actually, and I think a lot of mothers did, we were traumatised from the moment we were abandoned to the mother and unmarried mother's homes, is what they were called back then. We were traumatised, and so you were out of your body, and it was unreal what was happening around you. An awful lot of there's quite a lot of the mothers that were in various different homes who are in our group now have recollections of girls as young as 12 and younger in their homes and pregnant. It wasn't only our own personal experiences that traumatised us. Seeing how other girls were being treated, seeing the distress on them had major impacts on us. We weren't encouraged to get to know each other, and we weren't encouraged to be of comfort to each other.
Yeah.
It was very, we went through a phase of total depersonalization in those homes. Some of us ended up with different names and to cover, where we came from, or because there was other girls with the same name. our identity was stolen from us.
Yes, it sure was. Yeah.
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 And then at such a young age, you know, to go through, like, for instance, I was dropped at the doors of Hollis Street, and I had never experienced childbirth. I'd never witnessed childbirth before. And to have to go through those hours on my own, in a cubicle, in Hollis Street Hospital, with nobody really, you know, none of the nursing staff really paying attention to me, popping their head in through the curtain now and then, and see was I okay, or to give me more medication. I was drugged out of my head while I was in labour. I have vague memories of the delivery. I didn't see my daughter for hours after she was born, but I'm lucky that I actually got to see my daughter. Other young girls weren't allowed to see their infants at all.
Oh my God, right, okay. Yeah.
John.
No, no.
But, you know, it was horrific. It was traumatic. And it actually detached me. It detached me from, you know, I go out of my body when I sense fear. And I went out of my body when I was 18.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I'm interrupting you here. You were so young, you know, only 18 years of age, very much alone in the hospital,
yeah.
And very frightened. Frightening experience, I have to say.
And then to nurse my baby for 7 days in the hospital in an open ward where there was other mothers and they were married women and there were other girls like myself, but now that you had to pretend to be, I don't mean this in a bad way now, but you had to pretend to be overjoyed, you know, about your baby, and yet you knew that your baby was going to be taken from you.
Oh yeah.
You know, you were told not to talk about it, even in the hospital. It was absolutely horrific. And
so 40 years later, after your first baby, you finally became reunited, I think.
No, it was actually, she was 28 when we reconnected, and we...
Oh, 28, I beg your pardon.
28, yeah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
28 years later, and we corresponded back and forth through email, and we eventually met 3 years after we started communication. And, you know, my daughter has her own life. All of my children have their own lives at this stage because they're all adults. But my daughter's busy. She's got work. She does have other people that she regards as her family, and I have to respect that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, again, I'm in a position where it's more trauma because I have to pretend in a lot of ways that my daughter is better. You know, because I can't impose myself on her.
Yeah, yeah.
She has two children. And it wasn't just her babies that were stolen from us. It was our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. You can hear my voice is really struggling.
It's okay.
But it was our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren and future generations.
Yeah.
That were also stolen from us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And with your second child in St. Patrick's on the Lavin Road. You fought with the nuns.
And you managed to
hold on. Is that right?
Only the nuns. It was an Eastern Alport social worker that was sent by my mother to make sure that I did what was expected of me.
Yeah.
You know, there was an emotional blackmail, I suppose is what you'd call it, but there was an emotional element to this. And one of the things that I've realised through running and being involved in Irish First Mothers is that the vast majority of the women who had this done to them are actually, and I'm not talking about religion here, have the most Christian attitudes, have the most Christian demeanors: empathetic, compassionate, forgiving, without ever being asked or being spoken to about what was done all those years ago. But forgiving in the sense that they're, you know, do they understand what it's like to be ostracized? They understand what it's like to be called names.
Yeah.
They understand what it's like to, you know, have the finger pointed at you. And we don't do that to other people.
Yes, no,
and
we don't.
All these years, John, you know, we've all gone through life silenced. Nobody speaks to us about it. Nobody refers to it. Nobody ever, like, if there's talk about your children, just talk about your subsequent children, and no talk about your first child, or, you know, in my situation, what happened after my second child was born, and the fact that I was on my own. I was almost 20. I'd managed fine, but emotionally and psychologically, the damage that was done even then by all of my family, my siblings, being ostracized from me.
Uh-huh.
The way society looked at us.
Mm-hmm.
The attitude of the nuns towards us. The attitudes of landlords towards us.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. As regards the recent findings in Tuam, I think at least... you were saying at least 100 more institutions need to be examined. And in particular, perhaps...
I'm not good at... Sorry.
In particular, maybe St. Pat's as well, on the Navan Road.
Well, I mean, St. Patrick's on the Navan Road used to be... I forget the name of the place. You know, it was a workhouse way back. It's a very similar set-up to Tuam. And the convent, I say that wherever babies were born on site, the grounds need to be examined.
Yeah.
Because the babies were born on site on the Navan Road. They were born on site in Besborough and Cork. I'm not no good at numbers, and my memory isn't great on names.
Yeah.
But there are homes, and look at, they're fully listed. Everybody knows who they were. There are institutions around the country where babies were born on site, where babies were nursed or cared for on site. Now, if you want to call it cared for, because we know what's happened with the babies whose remains have been found in Tuam and the conditions that they are said to have suffered from. Right, that malnutrition being one of them.
Yeah, probably being the main one. Probably.
So wherever...
No, sorry, go ahead.
So wherever babies were born and cared for on site, the grounds need to be examined. There are reports of the women now remembering seeing burial areas in St. Patrick's.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
I believe as well now, I'm not sure, but maybe some of the listeners, but I believe, I had an email actually during the week from somebody who mentioned there's this new school being built on Summer Hill.
Summer Hill in Dublin. Dublin 7.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I'll have to get back to you on that now.
Okay,
but,
okay.
You know, this person who isn't a member of the group has said that, you know, they think that the grounds of that needs to be examined as well. But I will clarify that with you. I will email you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. Please do. Okay, just to move on a little bit, you founded the Irish First Mothers Group.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and what it entails and... When did you actually begin the group, up the group?
In February 2014, having been a member of other groups, basically run by adopted people for a number of years, I realised that mothers' voices weren't really being heard, that they weren't getting to express themselves, that when they did express themselves, they were getting little or no feedback. And where the their stories might be read and might be regarded as, you know, drama or whatever, I just felt that the mothers were basically being ignored. So I decided there was a place for women who'd been through this experience where they could share information between each other and empathy and encourage each other to recover. A peer-to-peer support group. So I set up a peer-to-peer support group on Facebook, and it's a private group for confidentiality. And it grew from two or three of us at the beginning, and it now contains almost 70 people.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. We've had yearly conferences since we began. We went back to Dunboyne last year for the first time, and for many women to return to Dunboyne. It's now the Dunboyne Castle Hotel. And we decided that we'd write to the Dunboyne Castle Hotel, explain who we were, and tell them that we were thinking of having a conference and returning there in order to support each other on our return, and basically to, you know, try bury old ghosts. And I'm sorry, that's not, you know, considering what's been found in the recent weeks, the word bury doesn't go down too well with that. But,
yeah.
So we returned, and the Dunboyne Hotel were very welcoming of us. They provided the facilities for our conference, and we had a brilliant weekend. Now, it was very emotional for some of the mothers, but the fact that some of us who had been back previously were there to support the ones that were going back for the first time made a huge, you know, impact. And we were there together and there in joy rather than, you know, in the sadness that we'd been incarcerated in years ago.
Yes, yes.
Now, the youngest mother, Jan, the youngest mother in our group, we range in age from late 30s up to mid-70s.
Okay.
And we span the country. We span all age groups. But the most important point in this is we're not talking about distant past. We're talking about mother and baby homes. We're still running in Ireland up to the mid-1990s.
Gosh, can you imagine? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I believe about 11 days ago, the Irish First Mothers Group, you wrote to the Attorney General to bring prosecutions under the Irish Genocide Act 73 in relation to religiously motivated grievous injuries suffered. Yeah.
That's right, John.
Have you ever heard back?
We haven't heard anything.
You've heard nothing back?
Sorry. We've heard nothing back. We're still waiting. And we have asked for a response. All we're looking for is advice from the Attorney General.
Right. Okay.
And we're looking for Minister Sapone to engage with us as well.
Has she ever actually been in touch with anyone in the group or met with you to discuss the...
Not personally. She did state last August that she was intending on meeting with... she uses some word and I forget what it is, but anyway, she was meeting with interested groups, and we wrote to her actually inviting her to our conference, and I understood like the Dáil recess was on at the time, so she was out of the country, but on the fact that we made that invitation to her and she had said that she was going to be meeting with interested groups, she never did, and she declined to meet. We did meet with one of or two of her officials.
Okay.
But she's never actually personally met any of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. She also proposed recently an adoption bill which intends to prevent natural mothers having contact with their natural child. Would that be correct?
Well, actually, the Adoption Information and Tracing Bill, it's not put out to say that, like, you know, it's to prevent natural mothers having contact with their children that went for adoption. Of course, it's put out there that this is to enable, you know, connection. But there is a veto, and whereby a mother or, you know, a natural parent can say that they don't want contact and they don't want any information passed on to the adopted person when they reach the age of 18. Us Irish mothers were never offered confidentiality. We never asked for confidentiality. And we have no problem where our children that were taken for adoption having access to their original birth certificate. Now, there's another issue here, which is that, you know, there seems to be this idea that access to information means contact. It doesn't. Anybody, you know, any one of us, we're entitled to our original birth cert.
Of course.
It doesn't mean that, you know, so the adoption information and tracing bill, I think, is a deliberate act in order to frighten people, and there shouldn't be tracing added on to that. I think that we've got enough controls over us, and I think that the government needs to put out of adult relationships.
Yes, indeed.
I think that our adult children, you know, it's in our group, I've never known a mother to doorstep, as they call it, their adopted child, their child that was taken for adoption. Actually, I don't think it's been heard of across all groups here in Ireland,
yeah,
where either an adopted person or a natural mother, you know, imposes themselves on the other party, you know, we don't doorstep each other. So
yeah,
anyway, I think there's an awful lot of fear put out there. I think there's, in a way, you know, it's trying to prevent us all basically recovering and having some form of connection. You know, when our babies, I shouldn't say gave, we didn't give our babies. In the vast majority of cases, those babies were taken. I think I've only heard two or three natural mothers in my time say that they actually thought it was for the best that their child went for adoption. And I acknowledge them, because there are those mothers out there. There's only three that I'm aware of personally. But, and I'm going to lose track of what I was saying. Vast majority of mothers are babies, you know, we didn't give them, they were taken from us.
Yeah.
And why would we ask for confidentiality if we didn't want to give our children for adoption in the first place? The whole confidentiality aspect was basically to protect adoptive parents.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, Cathy, I'm really sorry to say we could go on for another 30 minutes, but we can't.
Oh, we can do it again.
We'll do it again. I have to say, seriously, Cathy, hats off to you. You're an absolutely wonderful woman, a very brave woman, and I wish you every single success with the Irish First Mothers Group. Fair play to you.
Yeah, can I just give a few details, John?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, actually, about a website address or a Facebook account, Twitter?
We're on Twitter at First Mother's Voice. On Twitter, on the World Wide Web, we're www.irishfirstmothers.com. On Facebook, we have an open group, which is Voice of First Mothers, and you can search for that on Facebook and request to be added. And for the private confidential group, where you email firstmotherstogether@gmail.com. And just give, you know, a brief introduction, and we'll have a chat, and I'll add you to the group once we've had a bit of a chat.
Because
we're based on confidentiality, I have to just ensure, you know, that the group is just for Irish First Mothers. And that's the private group.
Absolutely wonderful. Well, Cathy, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
It's
been a pleasure having you. I wish you all the very, very best with everything. We all do. And have a lovely weekend and a happy St. Patrick's Day. And we'll get you in again as well.
Thank you. I'm going to try to eradicate more snakes out of Ireland now.
Absolutely. That's very good. Okay. All the best now, Cathy. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.